This podcast is a Majestic Giraffe production. For more information and more content, visit majesticgiraffe.com.
But I was going into Toshi Station to pick up some power converters.
The droids are clean, the vaporizers are patched, and the speeders fume. It's time to pick up some blue milk and power converters. You're listening to Toshi Station Radio, brought to you by the Majestic Giraffe Network. Now here are your hosts for the Snarkiest Podcast in Star Wars and Geek Culture, Brian and Nancy.
On the outskirts of Anchorhead and on the shores of the Great Chott Flats, you're listening to Toshi Station Radio, the bright center in the universe for all things Star Wars and geek culture. I'm your host, Brian, and with me, as always, is my co-host and wife, Nancy.
Hi!
On today's episode, we're talking with Tom and Jay about Star Wars tabletop games and tabletop in general. We're about to get started, so sit back, grab some power converters, and enjoy the show.
And we would like to welcome back both Tom and Jay. Thanks for coming on the podcast.
Hey guys, nice to be here again.
Great to be back.
Yes. We are very excited about this topic of conversation because this is a topic I know absolutely nothing about. So I'm very excited to get educated.
I'm excited because I've been wanting to get back into pen and paper and tabletop RPG and get Nancy into it forever. So yay! And before we get too much further, a note from our sponsors. Toshi Station Radio is brought to you in part by Audible.com. Listeners to this podcast can get a free audiobook by signing up for a free trial. Click the link on Toshi-Station.net for more details.
And we're also brought to you in part by Her Universe. Flaunt your world with Star Wars, Star Trek, Marvel, Transformers, Doctor Who, and other fandom-inspired wardrobe and jewelry. Click the link on our blog to purchase awesome geek gear and keep the lights running on the podcast. And we'll go right into what's new on the blog. Not a lot, but Bria reviewed Star Wars number 7, which is the single Obi-Wan episode. It takes place on Tatooine. So even if you haven't been keeping up with the series, you can go ahead and read that one. And also Kanan number 4. We had an interview with Christy Golden about Dark Disciple, and we also chatted about some of her other books in Star Wars and also a little bit of Warcraft. But there are spoilers for Dark Disciple, so if you haven't read it yet, don't listen. But you should have read Dark Disciple by now, so go ahead and listen. And we also put up just yesterday our Attack of the Clones live commentary. So if you've got the Blu-ray disc, you can just pop it in and listen along with us.
Oh, and we also published our go/no-go for Under the Empyrean Sky by Chuck Wendig.
Yes, we just put that up today. That's why
who's
I
that
don't.
Guy?
Who's that guy?
Who is that guy? let's say we move on to Fixer's Flash, the geeky things we've been up to.
Well, I read Under the Empyrean Sky by Chuck Wendig.
Hey, weird. So did I.
Yeah, we really liked it. I really loved it. So. As we said on the go/no-go, we definitely recommended people read it. If they're looking to see what they can expect Chuck Wendig to bring to Star Wars, this is a series he's told people to pick up. And I mean, even if you're not interested in Aftermath, which if you're not, why are you listening to this podcast? I would say definitely go read it. It's a really good series.
Or if you're just concerned about whether or not third person present can work, go read this book and
it can
put all of your concerns to bed.
It can. He's a very good writer. I like his wordsmithing.
I just want his ability to curse.
Yeah, it's a good ability. And I also read another book, Lie Smith by Alice Franklin, which is a urban fantasy set in Australia and deals with Loki, and it's a male-male romance, actually, which was interesting. I think that's one of the first ones I've read that's not straight romance.
Was that rep by Sarah Majibo?
Yes, it was.
Okay.
I follow her on Twitter, and every time she tweets a book.
Every time I see a random $1.99 purchase from Amazon, I assume that Sarah has
I'm a sucker for cheap Kindle books on Amazon. If there's a book I'm relatively interested in and it's on sale on Amazon, I'll buy it. That's why I have like 20 books on my Kindle I haven't read yet.
that's a Hydra novel, actually. Yeah. Del Rey's sister digital only imprint.
Yes, ooh, it is.
I did not know that.
Yes, it is.
That's technically a Del Rey book.
See? There you go.
We got some synergy going on there today.
Yeah, appreciate that.
As for me, also read and finished Under the Empyrean Sky by Chuck Wendig. I also wholeheartedly endorse it and say you should read it. I'm 10 chapters into the sequel right now. And I've been geeking out with gadget stuff, upgraded my Surface to Windows 10, and I've been streaming my Xbox One to it. So I'm playing Xbox in bed. It's wonderful.
So you're 10, how, you're 10 chapters in to the second book?
Yes.
Yeah, I'm only like, you're ahead of me now. I started this book like several days before Brian, the first book, and now he's ahead of me. He just, you read the bulk of the book in one night.
I read 80% of the book.
I was like, Brian, you gotta read this book. Brian, you gotta read this book. And he's like, all right. And then he finally read it. He's like, why did I read this before? You should listen to your wife.
I really should. Jay, how about you?
So I've been spending my last two evenings collaborating on a piece with Bria from Tashi Station.
Who's that?
It's actually going to end up... I know, who's that, right? It's going to end up being the first crossover piece between 1138.com and Tashi Station. And we've been sort of hinting at the topic over the last few days, saying it's something that we're both super into. And I can now officially announce that the topic is the topic of monarchy in Star Wars.
Ooh.
And we're going to go into a deep study of all the different monarchies in Star Wars, or the main three... different monarchies, Naboo, Alderaan, and the Hapen Consortium, and talk about the differences between them and just geek out about monarchy for lots and lots of pages.
So we're doing a crossover. Is it Blog Sweeps Week?
Well, you know.
Yeah, we'll have two pieces published on Tashi Station, two pieces published on 1138, so it'll be a lot of fun. And I guess speaking of books, I just finished reading A Whole New World by Liz Braswell, which is a Disney Hyperion book. It's part of a series called A Twisted Tale, where Disney's been doing a young adult, more mature, alternate universe takes of Disney novels, and this one's been Aladdin, and it's a really dark and awesome retelling of Aladdin.
Ooh. That sounds cool.
I have to go check that one out.
Yeah. It's fantastic.
Tom, what about you?
Well, I am going to be taking the day off tomorrow, driving up to New Hampshire to a place called Fun Spot, which is the world's largest video game arcade.
Take me with you.
It's pretty awesome. My friends and I went last year. It's kind of become a relatively yearly thing. It's just like floor after floor of classic and more modern arcade games. They have a ton of Star Wars games there, including the original sort of Star Wars arcade cabinet that the newer Star Wars Battle Pod is. It's not like based on, but obviously when you sit down in the battle pod, that's like the first thing that you think of.
Yeah, we've got that one at Player One. It's that sort of the vector graphics,
yeah.
X-Wing simulator.
Well, that's the original sort of Atari one. There is just Star Wars Arcade, which is you sit down and there's a flight stick in front of you, and you're playing a rather cinematic version of the original trilogy, much like the Battle Pod. It's just not quite as like crazy immersive.
Oh, yeah, I know
which
one you're talking about.
Yes. So I will spend most of my weekend sitting at that machine.
it's all life choice for me.
Yes, setting as many high scores as I can, and of course leaving the initials H-A-N on all of the Star Wars.
Nice.
So yeah, actually, if you play a Star Wars arcade game in New York City and find that the high score is H-A-N, it's probably because I said it.
Anyway, it's funny because...
And then as far as book stuff, you know, there's lots of fun stuff going on at Del Rey. Aftermath's coming out soon. We've got Battlefront still. Rise of the Empire, the short stories are very much nearing the home stretch, and they're all awesome.
I can't wait to get my hands on those.
I'm very much looking forward to people reading those and reading everything else we've got.
Yay. Awesome. It's funny because there's a Fun Spot here, but it is not the largest arcade. It is like a
Isn't
carnival.
Is it a water park or something?
No, it's like a carnival thing. It's like a competitor to Disney, meaning that you can just go and spend a few hours. And they're like, if you don't want to spend all your money at Disney, come to the Fun Spot. It's not nearly as fun. So cool. Everyone's doing a lot of fun stuff. There's not a lot of news, though.
There's not. We kind of blew all that with San Diego Comic-Con.
Yes. So if you're planning to go to Celebration London, too bad. The 3-day tickets are already sold out, which is crazy because it's like just a little over a year away.
I thought it was absolutely nuts that they sold out at Celebration Anaheim.
Yeah, so I'm really wondering what the cap is, what the cap was.
Well, I'm talking to Mark Newbold, who runs Jedi News UK.
Yeah.
The convention center they're using over there is really big.
Yeah, that's crazy. That's crazy.
I think this Star Wars thing just might work.
You think so?
I think it's got a chance.
Yeah. Okay. So there's another announcement at Comic-Con that we didn't get to on our recap episode, but there will be a crossover with the Star Wars and Vader ongoing comics called Vader Down. And if you've been reading them, you know they kind of parallel each other anyway, so this will be them, you know, crossing over. And then also the awesomest news, which coincidentally we have Tom on to talk about, is there was an excerpt of Aftermath in Entertainment Weekly, and it was awesome. So if you haven't read that yet, you should go read it. I know a lot of people didn't want to because they're like, oh, I don't want to read the excerpts. I want to just read the whole book. But it's really short. It's not like, you know, 50 pages or anything. It's just like literally the first chapter.
It's really short. It doesn't give too much away.
No, it's just a little teaser. And it's really awesome.
And I might have read it like 24 times that day.
And Jay, we'll let you do the honors. Who is in the excerpt? Well, we all knew Wedge is in the excerpt, which we're very excited about. Who else was in the excerpt, Jay?
Ray Sloan, Admiral.
She's not Captain Sloan anymore. That's, she got a promotion.
Admiral Sloan to you.
Admiral Sloan. Shouldn't you have yelled that, Jay, though?
I know. I just didn't want to break my microphone.
He's being respectful of the rank.
Yeah.
He's being respectful of the rank.
Anytime.
You know, as Gilad Pelion once says, you don't simply yell across the bridge of a Star Destroyer.
Exactly.
If you ever see Jay tweet or write anything online about Sloan and it's all caps, it's because his phone automatically caps it.
Autocorrects to all caps.
Mine did that to Luke for a long time, and I finally taught it not to.
Yeah, after you bought a new phone.
No, it was on this phone. I just had to keep correcting it because it was like really weird. But yeah. So yeah, I was really excited. I like the synergy between books. I like characters reappearing. It reminds me of the old days. The old days of the
EU. Say that like it was so long ago.
It was for me.
It's like 15 years ago, kind of.
That's a long time. A lot can change in 15 years.
They'll never do another movie.
Nope. But yeah, so it's very cool. There's, you know, Wedge is off on a mission. He gets captured by a Star Destroyer. Ray Sloan is a BAMF. I'm really looking forward to it. And we didn't get any intro to the new characters, so I'm looking forward to seeing those as well. So yeah, that's the news.
That's the news, which brings us then to the rumors.
Yeah.
And other various film and TV such stuff. Rumors of a Netflix TV series.
Yeah.
For Star Wars.
Three live action Netflix TV series, which
sounds ambitious.
This comes from Cinelinks, but I don't know if I buy three of them. I definitely buy one.
I don't know if I buy it going to Netflix.
I do, because Marvel.
They have Clone Wars.
They yes. do have Clone Wars, but I kind of think Disney might want to get this onto their flagship at ABC.
They might. I could see them doing the Marvel thing where they have shows on ABC, but then also on Netflix. I would prefer them doing it on Netflix because I think they could do a lot more on Netflix and not having to worry about stretching a show over 22 episodes and appealing to the mainstream. If they do on Netflix, you can pretty much do a 12-episode series.
That would be my choice, too.
Yeah.
I just don't know if that's where they'd want to go with it.
Jay or Tom, you guys got any opinions about Marvel, or not Marvel, Lucasfilm on Netflix?
And I think it would work great. I think that Netflix allows for flexibility, and it's not really a budget thing, although yeah. the Netflix shows tend to look like they're more polished. They're like an in-between world between premium cable and network TV, so it just seems, audience-wise, like Netflix communicates this is a higher quality show than broadcast TV.
Yeah. I am interested to see what shows people would like to see on Netflix.
Gee, I bet you can guess what I want.
It's probably what I want. X-Wing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yep. Give me Star Wars in the vein of Battlestar Galactica. I'm good.
Can they be less jerky, though?
No. Have you read the X-Wing series? Oh,
well. You heard it here first. Ronald D. Moore is going to do a Star Wars on Netflix.
Don't
now
start.
You're just causing trouble.
You are causing trouble. I bet Jay would want something about the Empire.
Well, yeah, actually, about the Empire maybe, but just in general, I've long dreamed of like a Star Wars style West Wing, and I'd even accept it being like the New Republic or Rebel government post Endor, and just dealing with all the shenanigans and all the politics of having to run the galaxy. I think it would be great.
But what if the main character is Mon Mothma?
Then I could watch every cliffhanger. Instead of feeling sad that she's upset, I could be like, yes, Mon Mothma's in trouble again. What will happen next?
Oh, Jay. Tom, what shows would you like to see on Netflix?
I really need to see the Jackson Chronicles.
Of course.
I don't know what that show is. I don't know what it's about. I don't really know what goes on, but Jackson is doing something. That's what I want. Jackson the Rabbit.
I want that to be animated from the same studio that brought us Tiny Toon Adventures.
That would be amazing. That would be amazing.
Oh my god.
Yeah. That's what I want. It's very simple.
I could see like a cop show, like Corsac. Like Magnum PI, you know. Maybe then I'd finally get to see Corellia on screen.
Who's the Magnum PI of the Star Wars universe, though?
Hal Horn?
Yes.
He'd have to have a mustache.
Not Corin, he's too square.
He'd have to have a mustache.
Biggs.
What?
We're going with mustache.
Biggs faked his death and turned into an undercover cop.
Oh my god.
Sold.
Write that story.
Alright, that's the news and the rumors. It was a light week.
Yeah. But that's okay, because we got a lot to talk about, I think. I'm not going to be doing a lot of talking. I'm going to do listening.
Tabletop games is Cammy's concerns this week. We want to talk about pen and paper RPG, tabletop games, and how it all kind of intersects with Star Wars.
Yes.
Partly because I'm thinking of launching a second show on the site. We'll see how this goes.
So the first question I would like answered is, what the heck is a tabletop RPG? Because I don't know.
Anybody want to take that?
I think you can take it.
You take it.
Okay. All right. So a tabletop RPG is sort of, let's see, the easiest way to explain it, it is a shared storytelling experience. You sit down with a group of other people and you create a story and an adventure. But rather than just like each of you like writing down the paragraphs of a story the way you might do if you were in a like creative writing class, or you know, if you were on a forum kind of doing a group story and everyone just kind of like takes a character, you do this by inhabiting characters and rolling dice and you know, using charts and things to actually literally play out the lives of these people. And it's a very much, it's sort of like play acting. It's sort of like being in a play of sorts, but you're just doing it around the table. And classically, tabletop games involve dice that have more than six sides and all sorts of, you know, weird other little, you know, like 20-sided dice and 4-sided dice and all sorts of weird things that you don't see when you open up a Monopoly game. And there are miniatures and maps and grids, and you can get really complex and have all sorts of like crazy architectural arrangements in front of you to show a landscape. Or you can, as the sort of the games indicate, you could literally sit there with a piece of paper and a pencil and a couple of dice and tell a story, and most of it just takes place in your imagination. So it is the you know, the analog version of all those wonderful video games that we like to play. In fact, most of the wonderful video games that we love, including basically every massive multiplayer online game like The Old Republic or World of Warcraft, most of them, basically all of them, owe their origins to tabletop role-playing games. That's kind of where most of this stuff has its roots. And most of the people who developed those games had their gaming roots in playing and developing tabletop games.
Yeah, if you've played any BioWare game, under the hood is pretty much some variant of a D&D engine.
Yes. Yes. Knights of the Republic, the most well-known sort of Star Wars RPG game, is basically Dungeons & Dragons under the hood with a beautiful sheen of Star Wars storytelling and graphics on top of it. And I don't say that in a disparaging way in any form, just saying that that is exactly how that game functions.
And even other famous RPG games, like the ever-popular Elder Scrolls game, started as a homebrew RPG setting that the developers would play amongst themselves for fun.
Right. And over time, what these game designers have done is just taken the mathematics of RPGs, because tabletop is all sort of based on the math of your character, for how strong your character is or how good they are at things or whether or not you hit somebody or whether or not you pick up an item, and just hidden all that math behind the very cool gameplay features and the graphics and the sort of smoother interfaces.
Cool. All right, so I am a fan of, you know, I obviously read the books. I have been known to dabble in the fan fiction. So what would you say to someone like me who is kind of like, about tabletop games, as far as why would I do that instead of, you know, reading books or writing stories or playing video games or anything like that?
So I think I'll field this one because I might be the next most inexperienced role player here, in that I've just played a handful of pen and paper games myself, and the thing I loved about them and didn't realize about them is they're a really interactive storytelling experience. So it's even more interactive than, say, telling a round robin story, because you're in the same room usually, unless you're playing online, and you have to think on the fly, and you have really creative character, like you have a combination of pre-planning, you know, you create your character and their background and everyone else creates their background, and then as the story unfolds, each person reacts in a different way or does different things, and the game master gives you different scenarios, and you are sort of crafting a story as you go along. And sometimes if a dice roll goes against you, what you wanted to do doesn't happen, and you think of alternatives. And it's a fun, interactive, and exciting and some hilarious experience, really.
Yes, and actually that's really the best way to think about it, is how interactive it is. So Nancy, well, let's think of it as, say,
okay,
how would you like to be an X-Wing pilot?
Well, would I ever?
You could do that in a Star Wars role-playing game. How would you like to go on an adventure alongside Luke Skywalker?
Very much so.
You could also do that in a role-playing game. Basically, any story that you've ever wanted to see told in Star Wars, you could tell as part of a role-playing experience with, you know, other people. And any character you've ever wanted to be, however you've ever envisioned yourself if you were in Star Wars, mm-hmm. role-playing games more than anything else, because, you know, books, you're reading characters, you might obviously connect with characters, but you aren't that character. And writing gets you a little closer, but again, you still quite aren't that character. And a video game is sort of constricted by the parameters of the game. But in a role-playing game, you can create down to the absolute sort of most minute details, as Jay was talking about, the character that you would most want to be in Star Wars, and then get to take that character on all the kind of whatever adventures you can imagine. And it's just like a hell of a lot of fun and a super great social activity that just happens to be fully immersed in the galaxy far, far away.
Cool. So it would be like, basically I get to do the stuff that people love in video games, but without having to play video games. It's because, yes, I suck at them.
And with fewer rules and constraints.
Okay. Cool.
It's way less on the rails, yes, than a video game would be.
This is my favorite example of how to differentiate a video game from a tabletop game. Let's imagine that you're walking through a field and you come across a fence, as you would do in many video games. In a video game, you have a set number of ways that you can sort of negotiate that problem. Mm-hmm. Most video games, you could probably jump over the fence. Depending on the video game and the physics engine, maybe you can like knock down the fence or set it on fire, or like maybe even, you know, break it. In most video games, though, you don't have the choice to just be like, well, I'm just going to go the other way, because the video game needs you to get across the fence or you have to get to the other side. A tabletop game, literally any way you can think to get around that fence is in play. You can go over it. You can take it apart. You could put the wood in your backpack and sell it somewhere later. You could say, you know what? I don't care about this fence. I'm going that way. And you just go that way. You could dig under the fence. You could set it on fire. You literally can do anything you can think of. There are more or less no constraints. Almost any solution can be used or any idea can be had, whereas a video game obviously has to conform to whatever the parameters of the coding is. And even the most elaborate games like Skyrim or Grand Theft Auto or whatnot, they all have eventually invisible walls that you run up against.
Right. Okay, cool. So there are several Star Wars games. There have been several. So yes. What are they? In the past games, and then which ones are there today?
So there are basically three Star Wars RPGs. There was the original sort of Star Wars RPG that people are probably pretty familiar with, was done by West End Games.
Yes.
And most people, particularly if you're a book reader, are probably familiar with the name West End Games because a lot of people who became Star Wars authors or who now actually have a connection to Lucasfilm, like Pablo Hidalgo, have a connection in their past to West End Games, either having worked there, written some of the materials there, or just been, you know, heavily involved in playing and sort of liking the West End Games material. Yeah.
And if you've heard about the early or Tim Zahn writing Heir to the Empire, he said that they basically gave him a huge box of the West End stuff and said, here, use this in your book.
Yes. So West End Games is the original. That was in the 80s, and West End Games ran through, I think it ran through about 99, the company did. And it was an early RPG system that was just based on, you had a bunch of D6s, you know, regular dice, six-sided dice, and your characters had a bunch of different attributes, and depending on what you were trying to do, you would choose the attributes like your strength or your other skills that you thought were most appropriate. You'd have a number of dice, you'd roll them. If you got high numbers, that meant you did well. If you got low numbers, it went bad. Simple as that. Mm-hmm. After that, Star Wars, the license moved over to Wizards of the Coast. Wizards of the Coast is the company that does Dungeons & Dragons. So they are sort of the most famous RPG-making company in the world. And they had it for about a decade through basically all the 2000s. And their version of it is a little bit different in that it's a D20 system, which just means that the basic dice die that you use is a 20-sided die, one of those awesome polyhedral looking things. And what that just means is if you want to do something, let's say, Nancy, you want to fire the weapons on your X-Wing and try to blow up a TIE fighter, you would roll your D20. Your character would have a number of skills, or it would have a number of sort of numbers on your character sheet that would tell you how good you were at piloting an X-Wing or at firing, you know, lasers. And you'd roll your D20, you'd add two numbers together, and your game master would tell you if you hit the TIE fighter or not. It's a little bit simpler system. It's just as nimble, but the mechanics are slightly different. But now, since 2012, Fantasy Flight Games, who also makes the X-Wing Miniatures game, who also makes Imperial Assault, they make Armada, they make tons of awesome Star Wars stuff, they now have the RPG license. And they have been putting out one master book every year for the last 3 years. Started with Edge of the Empire, then they did Age of Rebellion. And in fact, tomorrow, we're actually recording this at the right time, because tomorrow, Force and Destiny, the last of the three core books, gets released.
Ooh.
And they've also released a bunch of extra supplements and sort of side adventures and things. And that system is a dice pool system. It actually uses its own custom dice, though there are ways you could translate them to using D20s and D6s, though I don't recommend it. We'll get into that later. And that system is a little bit closer to the West End game system, where you sort of have a pool of dice and skills and you pick out the ones you want to use. But there are some very cool key differences that make it a little more unique and actually help it make it a really good system for storytelling. That's a really long way of saying that there have been a couple of iterations. They're all a little bit different. The current version is Fantasy Flight and is the most available. But the cool thing about them is that you really could play any of the three systems that you wanted. They're all still remarkably relevant. And a lot of the books from the older systems, particularly the books that are more or less lore books that are just like, here's a whole book about Tatooine and what life is like on Tatooine. And here are places on Tatooine. And here are, you know, the types of people that live on Tatooine. Those types of books, even if you have one from like 1989, and I actually have some West End game supplements, you could still use to sort of inform your storytelling under the Fantasy Flight system. Cool. And I actually, I do that. I have, I find them at used comic book shops all the time, and I'm snatching them up left and right because they're awesome.
So this those
and, yeah. And I had to do a brief plug for those lore books, because even if you're not an RPG player, a lot of these West End game supplements, and along with Fantasy Flight, the more recent works, they release different books called source books, which go into, for example, if you were a big fan of the Zaun books back in the day, they would have a Thrawn Trilogy source book where they'd take characters from the books and give them stats as well, but they'd also do background stories, little vignettes, little short stories, little sidebars, or they'd release adventure books with short stories, and many authors like Timothy Zahn and Michael Stackpole would write short stories in them. So if you love stories, getting a lot of these RPG books can be a great way to get really rare and old school Star Wars stories to read that you didn't even know existed until you check these things out.
Yeah. Those books are just like a treasure trove of like hidden goodies. They're awesome.
Cool. So this isn't related to the tabletop games, but the Tom, you mentioned Fantasy Flight also does like the miniature stuff. What is that game like?
So actually, that's a sort of, it's a type of tabletop game. It's just not technically speaking an RPG, though.
Okay.
Imperial Assault is kind of like a hybrid thing. The miniature games are just that. You are playing with sort of miniature versions. In this case, for the X-Wing game and Armada, you're playing with small versions of ships. If anyone's ever seen any of the photos of me like posting stuff from my desk, you'll see I have a bunch of little ships all over my desk, and those are X-Wing miniatures. So they have TIE Fighters and X-Wings and the Millennium Falcon, and they've got, you know, Slave One and all sorts of other ships. They're constantly releasing new ones. And it basically, you can play a game, a type of board game type thing, where you will create a little fleet of ships that you want to play with, and all the ships maneuver differently, and they all have different weapons, different speeds, and you are sort of playing a little tactical spaceship battle game.
So it's kind of like a tabletop RTS.
Yes, actually, very, very much like that. Or if anyone's at all interested, if you're familiar with things like Warhammer, which are those like very big, kind of very crazy, like lots of miniatures all over the table, like tiny little warring games, it's like that, but on a just using ships. Armada is similar, but instead of it being sort of like each individual ship, you are sort of controlling entire fleets, entire sort of battle groups of ships, rather than sort of individual dogfighting, which is what X-Wing Miniatures is a little more focused on.
And if you love the Expanded Universe, the Fantasy Flight miniatures are great because they really draw from Expanded Universe ships. The first Armada set, the Empire, starts out with the Victory Star Destroyer, which has never been done in any physical toy or product or model before. And the X-Wings miniatures has like E-Wings and TIE Defenders. And so, you know, even though people are like, oh, no, Legends, you know, Fantasy Flight is pouring out great EU products that you can look at and say, you know, man, I wish I was 10 years old and had this toy to play with, but I, you know, I can do a grown-up version of playing and play Armada instead.
Cool.
Yeah. I can speak basically that all the Fantasy Flight game Star Wars stuff is like crazy top-notch quality. It's really great. If you're ever at a show, they were at Celebration, they go to a lot of the cons, they'll have tables set up where they'll have these games out, and they'll even do a free 5-minute demo or 10-minute demo with you, and they're just amazing just to go look at for the production value, because they actually use scans of the real Lucasfilm models to make the ships that they sell. So like when I pick up one of the X-Wings on my desk, that's based on scans of like actual Lucasfilm, you know, models of the X-Wings that were used to make the movies. So that's the sort of level of detail and quality that they get into.
Yeah, we were at a comic shop a couple weeks back, and they had some of the Fantasy Flight models on display there, and I wanted to buy every last one of them.
I know, I have so many of them.
So here's a very open-ended question. So say you are interested in doing an RPG. How do you set one up? Both, where do you find people to do it? How the actual mechanics of setting it up? And then there are so many different types of games out there, and like the older games versus the newer ones. Which one do you pick? How do you decide? All of that stuff. It's very daunting if you know anything. Now I know how people feel that we're like, where do I start reading Star Wars books? And they're like, well, there's 120 books out there.
So My initial recommendation would be, as far as picking like which game am I going to play, sort of which system, my recommendation would be to start with the newest version. Not just because I do think that of the three that it's the best one, but just because of its availability, that means the most is going to be easiest for you to find the introductory resources and the resources that you're going to need to learn the game. The other versions, the Wizards of the Coast books are still, you can still find them. And the West End game stuff, you can still find that stuff. But the Fantasy Flight version is the most readily available. It's the newest one. I think that in terms of its pickup, you know, its ability to learn how to play it and the sort of real benefits it has towards creating some really cool cinematic, truly sort of Star Wars feel moments, that it's the best one. And what's really nice is there are a couple really easy ways to get a game set up. One, Fantasy Flight releases what they call starter box sets. They are not the full book. They're not this full sort of textbook tome that you would buy. But it is a sort of introductory game that comes with a couple of pre-made characters for you. Comes with dice, which is really cool because when you buy the actual book, they don't give you the dice. You have to buy the dice separately, so you get the dice. And it comes with an adventure book and a short rules book. And the adventure book and short rules book literally walk you through a introductory adventure and teaches you how to play the game and will even teach someone how to be the GM of the game, even if they've never GM'd before. And the materials are really well made. The instructions are really clear. It's really simple. Nancy, I could hand you the introductory material for the Edge of the Empire version, and you could sit down right this second, and in about 10 minutes, you could run the introductory adventure with the three of us playing as characters. And you would be great at it because the game, the introductory set, teaches you exactly everything you need to know on how to manage the game as a game master. So that's sort of the easiest way as far as like I want to learn how to play. The other cool thing is the internet is an awesome place for this. There are subreddits, there are forums. Fantasy Flight puts out tons of articles about how to play. You can go on YouTube and find, hey, let's play Star Wars RPG and literally watch an hour-long video of people sitting down to play. And they will teach you sort of like you'll get to see the mechanics in action. You'll get to see the rules in action. You'll get to learn how the dice rolls work. There are podcasts that do that. It's sort of the internet has like a never-ending set of resources for kind of getting to test drive these games without having to make like some massive investment and sitting down with a big book that, you know, admittedly that those books are gorgeous, but they can be slightly overwhelming if you've never played a role-playing game before.
Yeah.
I know, Jay, how have you found games when you've played, when you've played tabletop games in the past?
So the game we played among our friends was great. We played the Wizards of the Coast Saga system, which is sort of a refinement of their Wizards of the Coast system. And Wizards of the Coast wasn't my favorite system. I actually wanted to play one of the other two, but it ended up being great because they had a pre-made campaign called, what was it called? I forget the name of the campaign now. Dawn of Defiance. It was called Dawn of Defiance, and it was written by, you know, a bunch of well-known Star Wars authors, and they would run the game master through various scenarios. It would come with maps and all the things you would know in different scenarios. If players did this or did that, the game master would know how to do it. And it was really straightforward. The scenario walked us through everything. It wasn't hard to create characters, and I figure basically the first afternoon of playing, by then we'd all basically mastered the scenario and And whenever we had a dispute or a question about the rules, you know, we could consult the rule books, but the easiest thing to do would be go online, because if we had a question about how an ability worked or what this line of text meant, odds are somebody has already asked it, and there's a resource online where you can check that out.
Yeah, that makes things so much easier, because odds are if you have a question or you have, like, some weird thing you've run into, somebody else somewhere on the internet has run into the same thing. The last recommendation about learning to play or even finding a game is if you have a local gaming store, just go in and ask. There are a couple gaming stores here in New York, including one that I frequent almost every week, that I would actually run games at. And we would have introductory games for people. People would come in and say, hey, I'm interested in learning about this game. The people who work at the stores are usually really knowledgeable, or they'll usually have a demo set. So if you have a local sort of a board game or tabletop gaming store or comic book shop or whatever, I would say go in there and talk to people, because they are usually more than happy to show you how to play a game, or at least introduce you to some other people who might be interested.
Cool. All right. Yeah. So now you decide you want to set up a game.
Sure.
You need a game master.
Yes.
Henceforth known as a GM. what is GMing like? Who should be a GM, or can everyone do it? Tom, I think you added the unlimited power note to the show notes.
I did.
So that might be a hint of what being a game master is like.
Well, it's the promise and the it's sort of the promise and the responsibility. So anybody can be a game master. Anybody. If you ever run into someone who tells you that not everyone can, that person doesn't know what they're talking about and or they are lying to you. Anyone can be a game master. It is probably, and it is admittedly, because I started off just being a player and only became a game master after playing for a while. It can be a daunting thing to suddenly be responsible for sort of managing the game as well as trying to have fun and play. But anybody can. Really, you have to be kind of organized because it requires a little, you know, a little prep work. You got to figure out, all right, here's the part of adventure we're going to start in. Here's how I'm going to sort of nudge the players out the door and get them started. And then hopefully they will sort of, you know, influence the adventure and start to bring their own ideas to it. And then you also have to be the one who has to make sure that, you know, everyone is participating, that someone isn't trying to do something in the game that's going to break the game or make it uncomfortable for other people. Or if there's some sort of, you know, if the characters are trying to do something that you're challenging them, but you're also not overwhelming them, it's sort of, there's a lot of very subtle balancing you have to do as a game master, but all of that comes with experience and all of that comes actually best from just playing. So really anybody can be. It really just becomes you have to know the rules pretty well, though again, you can lean on players to help you as long as you're sitting around with players who sort of all understand that you're learning. Ultimately, being the GM is you're not in charge of the story. You're not trying to win. If you're ever sitting down to play a tabletop game and you're trying to win, you're playing the game wrong. You're not trying to control the story. It's not just your story because it's, again, it's interactive shared storytelling. So your job as the GM is to just be the person who takes everyone's ideas and kind of make sure that they fit together into a relatively cohesive tale. And then when something unexpected happens, like Jay, you mentioned, like the roll of the dice comes out completely unlike how you thought, you have to sort of be ready to kind of be there to figure out where that's going to take the story. So you have to be kind of quick on your feet. But GMing is not something that is like closed off to all but like a few people. GMing is actually something that I encourage mostly anyone who plays a tabletop game at some point to try, because you get to, you know, you get to add extra special things to the story. And if you have your own sort of narrative that you've always wanted to try and tell, you get to help push and guide the story in that way. Which is a lot of fun. Jay, have you been a GM before? Or Brian, have you guys been GMs before? Ever wanted to be a GM?
I've wanted to be a GM. I've only been a player though.
Yeah, same. I've never been a GM, but I've always appreciated the kind of creativity a GM has to show, especially when I make my characters. I tend to make zany character designs, and sometimes I'll do a thing where, like, you know, oh, no, I don't want to fight this bad guy. I just want to sit around or do something else, or, you know, my character brings the absurdly expensive comlink, and if we're on a stranded planet, that changes the scenario of the whole game. And the Game Master is, in my experience, I've always been very patient, very willing to change with unexpected things that players will do themselves and make sure the story still flows and everyone has fun with their silly ideas.
That's honestly the most fun thing about being a GM is, you know, when I sit down at a table to play a game and I've got, you know, I've got the adventure hook in mind. I usually have the, like, all right, what's the thing that's going to get everybody going and what's the goal? You know, that's what I'm going to give the players. But then usually I am looking for my players to try to throw as many monkey wrenches in as they can, to try to mess things up as much as they can, to decide, hey, you know what? The story more or less tells us that we should be headed down this road to do these two things. You know what? We don't want to do that. We want to go this way. We want to go down this other road into this dark alley where there doesn't look to be anything. And I like having to sort of come up with things to sort of fill in the gaps and to take a, you know, a single sentence that a player might say off the cuff and suddenly spin that off into a whole crazy side adventure. That's actually a lot of fun, and it's sort of, it gets to, again, the uniqueness, Nancy, of like why you would want to play a tabletop RPG, because you can end up having this type of shared storytelling experience that literally no other medium can give you. It's not possible to create sort of any other way. And that's the best part about being a GM, easily the best part.
Can you rotate GMs, or do you usually keep one throughout?
Totally rotate GMs. I mean, wouldn't do it sort of in the gaming session, but again, if we were, let's say that we were this, you know, the four of us were playing a game and one of us was being the GM and the other ones were the players, it could be like 1 week, you know, I'm the GM and we've got our little adventure with our Star Wars, you know, crew, and you guys go off and you have an adventure on some planet somewhere, and then that adventure kind of ends or we hand off. The next time we play, Jay might be the GM and perhaps he picks up the same characters, Nancy and Brian, that you guys were playing, and I start playing a character who's brand new but in the same sort of adventure. I get written into the story, however we decide to write me in. I'm a stowaway on the ship, or I'm the guy that you were sent to capture in the first adventure, or whatever. You know, however we all decide we kind of want that to work. And then the next time around, Nancy, you might be the GM. And, you know, Jay goes back to being maybe the character he was, or he's someone new. And again, we just keep going. Or we could just have every adventure with every GM be a sort of complete one-off, you know, like a single-issue comic book. And each right. time we're just playing different characters. You could sort of do it either way. I've played in a lot of game groups where we would rotate GMs every once in a while, just because it's nice to have variety. Every GM is kind of a little different, or they like to do, you know, they have their own specializations. And honestly, GMs like to play too. And as much as I like being a GM every once in a while, I like to sit back down and just be one of the players.
Right. So what?
And players can drop in too. Like we've had gaming sessions where we have a friend over and there's like, you know, make a character. You're a one-shot character that appears in this one area and the GM can totally write someone in, come up with any excuse, any reason to have this other person dropping by.
Yeah. You happen to be in the cantina. There's another person in there. Hey, why don't you join us? There it is. Done. Simple.
Yeah, there was actually...
easiest way to write someone in the game.
There's actually a scene in the book I just read, Lysmith, where they go and play D&D. And so the one character was, you know, the guy's date. And so they, you know, the GM was like, here, we have pre-made characters, and, you know, gave him one so he could jump in and play.
There you go. Oh, also, role-playing games will probably make you a better writer. And there are a lot of writers and a better storyteller. And there are a lot of writers and storytellers I know who play D&D a lot, or their writing was heavily influenced by playing Dungeons & Dragons or playing other role-playing games. So if you're just into storytelling and writing, then it's a sort of natural extension to continue to sort of exercise and flex those storytelling muscles, but in a little bit different way than sitting down to, you know, write something.
Now, as far as, like, rules go for the story, how does that work? Is it in the books, or is it, you know, the GM decides, oh, no, you can or can do this or you can't do that? Like, instead of, like, because I'm just trying to think of, like, people wanting to do really crazy things that don't make sense in the Star Wars universe, since that's what we're talking about. Or is the whole point that you can do crazy things or whatever?
Well... I think Jay and Brian will agree with me, but I think it comes down to, A, the games all do have rules. There are right. rules about, like, if you want to take out your blaster and shoot it at someone, how do you do that? So what dice do you roll? How do the dice rolls work? What are the sort of, you know, what would you have to get in order to actually hit someone? How could you evade it? Like, there are mechanics like that. Right. The rules as far as sort of what you allow storytelling-wise, it has to kind of be a sort of group understanding about what kind of game you're running from the whole table. Are we running a game that's going to get, like, super visceral and violent, or are we all not comfortable with that and we'd rather run a game that's a little more light? You know, are we running a game where sort of, as far as Star Wars goes, like, you know, anachronistic things could sort of happen, things that you would probably never see in a movie or a book or the comic books? Or are we going to, like, you know, strictly adhere to a set of storytelling rules that we all kind of agree with? It sort of depends. It's sort of up to from game to game.
Right. And, like, a good example is one of the games I was playing, one of the characters wanted to play a Chiss. And I was, you know, complaining, but the Chiss weren't discovered yet. You can't do this. And my GM said, look, she wants to play a Chiss. She can play a Chiss. And we'll come up with a reason why this character exists. So there's a flexibility between what the rules and the game will allow and what the GM will allow. And, you know, sometimes if there's a give and take, and it really depends on the GM's personality and how willing they are to indulge the player.
Yeah. And, you know, as a GM and as a player, it's sort of like, if you guys have ever done any sort of, what's it called? Any sort of, not stand up, I'm sorry, I'm blanking. It's the idea of just saying yes and. So you know, if Jay comes up, you know, like Jay, your example, some character's like, hey, I want to play as a Chiss character. And you'll be like, well, you know, Chiss wouldn't have been discovered at this point in time. So instead of saying no, you say, okay, yes, you can be a Chiss, but since, you know, we're playing at a time when the Chiss wouldn't have been discovered, we're going to figure out this special way for how your character can kind of exist. So you always want to say sort of yes and, but again, it goes back to being within the parameters of what are people comfortable with. You know, you don't want the game to be broken by one player who just wants to like do something crazy, uber powerful that makes them the center of the game.
Yeah.
And actually, the Fantasy Flight books, if you go into one of the sections of them that sort of is talking about storytelling in general, it actually has a whole section, you know, sort of specifically for Star Wars, where it says there really are no rules for this game as far as what stories you tell. They actually specifically mention sort of like Legends books versus like reference books and other things, and they say use whatever the heck you want. You know, if you want to like pick up one of the, you know, old, you know, one of the Legends books and say, hey, we're just going to play the plot of this book and we're going to be an adventuring party that's sort of running adjacent to the main plot line, do it. If you want to pick up like Jason Fry's Essential Guide to Warfare and find one of those little story snippets he has in there and just say, hey, we're going to take this and we're going to elaborate it into an entire adventure that we're going to make ourselves. You know, you could do that. Again, it's sort of up to your gaming group and what everyone's comfortable with and what everyone agrees with will be fun. Because ultimately, it's about having a lot of fun.
I think that just sold Nancy on starting a tabletop podcast.
Yeah. If you want to pick up, you know, Jason Fry's Last Call at the Zero Angle short story and just be like, you know what? This is where our story starts. Our characters are in that cantina with them. This is our hook, and we're going to go from there. You could do that. You could totally do that. Make up your own characters to be, you know, part of that story and just use that as your base. Actually, that would be a really good hook for a game.
It would.
We might have our first campaign.
Awesome.
That means we have to read the story. We still haven't read it. We have to get those. We'll do that. Yeah. Damn it. I hate all you guys.
I'm lucky enough to be here sitting across from Nancy, and I see her eyes go bigger and bigger as she realizes all of these possibilities of what you can do in tabletop gaming.
Well, see, because it's like, as I've mentioned before, I'm a recovering Warcraft addict. And the thing I liked about it, I liked the storytelling. Like, I liked the, you know, going into the dungeon and fighting, you know, the Lich King. You know, I loved that part of it. I hated all the grinding stuff, and that if you didn't play for a week, you know, got left far behind everyone. You had to level to 70 and then 80, and you were like, I have to go kill mine some stuff and then make a stupid carpet, and you know.
Meanwhile, here you can just pick up once a month, every couple of weeks, and just go.
Yeah, I don't have to play for an hour every night, sometimes 3 hours every night, sometimes 12 hours a day on the weekends.
No, you set up a schedule that suits you. I mean, there are times I've sat down and I've played 8 hours in one day, just a whole 8 hour session, and that's like once every 2 months.
Yeah.
And they're actually, when I go to the gaming store, it would be 4 hours once a week. And it's just sort of whatever you can sustain schedule-wise and whatever you want to sustain.
Yeah, it's like I loved knowing, okay, I'm going to get to go home and raid. You know, if I could just do that once a week, like go and raid, like, yeah, that would be awesome. But then you have to do all the other stuff that goes along with it.
It takes the grinding out of an RPG.
Yes. Ugh, I hated that. Yes.
And the competition, you know, for loot or for experience or whatever, you're not going there to get the best stats or the best items. You're going there to have the best experience. So even if, for example, you have a group that's very strict about experience and levels and all that, if that's your gaming system, even if you're a weaker character than the others, there might be a good story reason why you're weaker, and you might have fun being a weaker character than the other people too.
Cool.
You are so
That's a really good point.
Shut up. Okay, so say you want to play a game.
Okay.
So there's, you know, you can play in person or remotely. So you know, we talked about how do you start up a game. So obviously there's comic stores or you could find friends, but then also now we have Skype and everything, so you can play with people online. How do you go about doing that? But with both ways, whether finding a game or just playing with people online.
Oh, I was waiting for Jay. Oh,
I would say that, you know, playing online is actually more and more viable these days. The two West End games I've played, I both played them on message boards. And, you know, when we need to have a conversation, we can jump on Skype to have a conversation and set up an interactive table. There are websites where they'll let you display table grids if you want a really grid-heavy game. But if you don't, if you just want something simple, a message board, email, Gmail, whatever format you want. Heck, even old-fashioned AIM has a dice-rolling feature. So technically, you know, if you wanted to go in an AIM chat room, you could play a dice-rolling game there too.
Cool.
Yeah. There are sort of any number of ways. For setting up an internet game, again, you kind of have come back to like what are people comfortable with. I prefer to play. I have some games that we play by email, and it's just sort of play by post, and you just, you know, one person after the other, and you kind of try to keep it moving. And it's the GM's job, kind of responsibility, to like, if after, you know, a couple of days somebody hasn't responded, you either give them a little nudge, or maybe you just say, okay, we're going to expedite this little thing and keep the game moving. Because the hardest thing about playing remotely on, you know, online in any form is keeping the momentum of the game, because somebody might be like, oh, I'm a little busy today, I can't post my thing, and they go off, and then suddenly life intervenes and it's 3 days and you forgot to post, and then the game has gotten slow and people just kind of get, you know, you get sort of taken away from the game because of other things going on in life. So you have to be a little more vigilant when you're playing online about trying to establish a set schedule of like, all right, everyone post once a week, even if your day is Tuesday, like everyone try to post once a week. But playing live games, like playing via GChat or Skype, and then having, Jay, as you said, like something open for visuals is, I think, the kind of perfect, most natural way to do it. Mm-hmm. Because the immediacy of us talking during a game and of us being able to play off each other, A, makes the game much faster, because even having a basic conversation like via email can take a little while because everyone's got to sort of respond back and forth. Whereas we could have a conversation in character in like 2 minutes. And combat is also faster and all that kind of stuff. So it's sort of what works. I mean, I play on Skype with some old friends from high school because that works best for us, and some of them are on the West Coast, and I play by post. I'm pretty sure I was the last person using Google Wave, because Google Wave was...
No, I think you meant to say you were the only person using Google Wave.
Well, I got into the beta of Google Wave because I emailed them being like, I want to use Google Wave to play tabletop games with my friends. And they sent us all beta invites. And then when they were going to shut it down, I'm pretty sure we were the only people who were sad about it, because we had, you know, months. I think we actually had years of our gaming life had been spent in Google Wave, because it was really great for tabletop. But you can also play on forums. Actually, TFN has forums where people are playing games sort of in the forum. And they also have forums where people can sort of post up, say, hey, I'm interested in playing a game. You know, does anyone have any open games? And you can sort of join up. That's another way that you can go about finding people to play with, is through sort of common forums and places where they have like dedicated spaces for you to post up. Hey, I'm a new player. I'd really love to play this system. Does anyone have an open slot? Or, you know, I need two extra players. Who wants to play? Those are places you can do that too.
Yeah, TFN is actually where I played both my play-by-post games, dice-rolling games, and they also have informal role-playing forums where you just do almost like a shared round-robin fanfiction and forget the rules, and those, I found, are a good way to transition people into a dice-based game, is to just have them do a shared storytelling experience on a role-playing system and then move on to a dice-based game.
Cool. Yeah, I think I like the idea of being able to do both, but I like, because I like the idea of playing, like going to a...
You like the snail mail RPG idea.
Well, no, I like the idea of going to a comic shop and, you know, hanging out once a month or whatever. But then, you know, there are so many people I know that I'm like, I want to play RPGs with them that live on the other side of the country, you know.
So you can fire up Skype, mm-hmm. get all the immediacy of playing in a comic shop somewhere.
Yeah. Well, because I mean, you know, and also, I guess, you know, because I did play Warcraft, so that was, you know, I was playing with people who lived in other countries sometimes, so.
Yeah. It all just, like, the only thing about the technology is, like, so if you're playing on Skype, like, I would probably run a game that was maybe a little less combat heavy than if I was playing in person, just because combat is the thing that takes the longest. And when you're not playing in person, even if you're playing on Skype in sort of a real time, it just adds a little bit more complication. So I wouldn't add like needlessly extra combat. Whereas if we were playing in person, I might have a little extra combat because it's a little, you could do it faster. So it's sort of like you learn the types of games that work a little better depending on your medium. Mm-hmm. But yeah, there's really nothing holding you back from playing any type of game you want with anyone.
All right. So we've kind of run the gamut on RPGs. Any last words? Any last? You don't have to convince me any longer, but any last things you'd like to say? What are, you know, Jay, what you really enjoyed about playing RPGs? You know, anything else you want, can think of to add?
I mean, I just enjoy some kind of variety people have in building characters. You know, whenever anyone plays any sort of game or video game, they always ask, you know, how did you do the story? What kind of class did you pick for your game? And role-playing is like that, but to the umpteenth level because of the amount of possibilities and creativity. The kind of character I might think is really fun might be different than the kind of character you like, Nancy. And then we get to throw them in a blender and everyone else gets to interact with each other. And it just creates, it's a lot of ways to really explore each other's personalities and just, and to interact with people, quote unquote, because they're, you know, your role playing is different people. So different types of people interacting with each other and having an adventure together. It's like meeting new people that don't exist, but now they do.
Now, do they have the Fantasy Flight games? Do they have like preset like character like classes, or do you just pick whatever you want your character to be?
Okay. So each. So I should very, very, very briefly explain, because I mentioned that there are three books, Edge of the Empire, Age of Rebellion, Force, and Destiny. They are all the same system. They are all completely compatible with each other. The only difference between them is the basic setting that each of them establishes. So Edge of the Empire, you are sort of characters living on the fringes. You're scoundrels, you're bounty hunters, pirates, things like that. Those are the character classes and the character roles that they... that book sort of gives you the templates for how you want to play, if you want to make your sort of Han Solo type characters. Age of Rebellion is more like you want to make the military type characters. You want to make Wedge Antilles. You know, you want to make your X-Wing or your TIE Fighter pilots or a Stormtrooper type character. That's the general setting there. And Force and Destiny, the last book, is you want to make a Jedi or a Sith. You know, you want to make someone who is steeped in the Force. That's how you, you know, that book will give you the sort of tools and rules to make those specific characters. But again, all the books and all the characters and everything would be compatible. So Nancy could build her X-Wing pilot in Age of Rebellion. Brian, you could build yourself a scoundrel in Edge of the Empire. Jay could build himself a Sith Lord in Force and Destiny. I have no idea why these three characters would be hanging out together, but the three of you could then play together as a team. But yeah, they have sort of all the rules for how you go about creating a character. And it sort of will it walks you through step by step of like, okay, pick your character race. Do you want to be a droid? What type of droid do you want to be? Do you want to be a human? Do you want to be Trandoshan? You know, do you want to be, you know, you could be any number of the available races. What kind of class do you want to be? And then if you pick this class, here are the sort of skills you get access to. Here are the you know, other abilities you get access to. You could pick your equipment and weapons. Yeah, it walks you through all of that. Some of the games, like I said, the starter editions, they come with fully preformed characters, so you don't have to go through the character creation process if you don't want to.
And it even goes further. If you want to be really complex, they have a series of separate source books for more sophisticated character professions. Like the thing that really excited me is just last month Fantasy Flight released a diplomat source book, and I've never seen anything like it before, so it's super exciting. Where they go through all the different rules where you can create any type of diplomat you want, and they have separate skill trees for them, and you know, you can like negotiate people to death. I love the idea.
Also, Nancy, you get your own ship.
What?
Each party, and this is something that's pretty unique to the Star Wars one, because in D&D, this doesn't just happen where they give you a ship of some kind. When your party starts, you get your own starship. And there are rules for space combat, so you can literally have dogfights in these games as well.
Man, I had to buy a ship in Saga. I can't believe that the Fantasy Flight just gives you a ship. That's incredible.
I believe the base ship is a Corellian freighter, I believe.
Oh, that's awesome.
It's not the Falcon, but, you know, it's a type of Corellian. I'm pretty sure it is. And then you can buy other types of ships. But, yeah, you get your own starship. You could have your own personal X-Wing.
I could definitely do with having my own personal X-Wing in my life. So the storytelling capabilities really are limitless in tabletop gaming and role-playing games. So I think we've officially sold Nancy on tabletop gaming, and I think I now have permission to launch a new show on the site, which will be devoted to Star Wars gaming. So I think we'll go ahead and wrap up there. It's been a great discussion. Jay, where can we find you online?
So I can be found on Twitter at Admiral Jello, and I can also be found at the 1138.com website where I write there.
Okay.
Oh, and the Force.net message boards where I'm Grand Admiral Jello.
Excellent. And Tom?
I'm on Twitter at Darth Internus, Internous. And if you happen to chat up any of the Del Rey Star Wars social media accounts, there's usually me on the other end of it. Also, Nancy, I feel like I'm required to say this. You've just taken your first step into a much larger world.
First step into a larger world, Nancy.
Aww. Yeah. Thanks.
And if anyone ever has questions about tabletop games, Star Wars or otherwise, first of all, the Fantasy Flight folks are super responsive in terms of their questions, but you can always send me a tweet or send me a message, and I'm more than happy to point you in the right direction.
Fantastic. Well, we will go ahead and wrap the show up there. This episode of Tashi Station Radio has been brought to you in part by Her Universe and Audible.com. Check out the links on the site. Help us keep the lights on. On Twitter, you can find us with the handles Tashi_Station. That's the official show account. You can find Nancy with Nancy Pants. That's Nancy with an I. You can find me with Lane Winry, LaneWinree. On Facebook, we're the Tashi Station Network. We're available on the iTunes Store and Stitcher. If you like what you hear, please do leave a review. It does help us grow the show. You can find our columns and news at Tashi-Station.net. That'll do it for us. We will catch you all next time.
Bye.
So long. This podcast has been brought to you by Majestic Giraffe Productions and is the official podcast of TashiStation.net. All Star Wars names, music, and logos are property of their respective trademark and copyright holders. Tashi Station Radio is not endorsed by Lucasfilm or any division of the company. Now go pick up some power converters.